You're only seconds away from totally understanding your pet. All right, maybe not, but you will be smarter. This is the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
We're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, we have with us as a returning guest on the line, Deb Davis, who is the National Marketing Manager for Paws with a Cause. Welcome back to the show, Deb.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you. Deb, for any of our listeners who maybe weren't around the last time that you were on the show with us, along with several other folks from Paws, can you explain exactly what Paws with a Cause is?
Absolutely. Happy to. Paws with a Cause is a national nonprofit organization that trains service dogs for people with disabilities. Those service dogs, assistance dogs, could also be hearing dogs for the hearing impaired deaf, service dogs for people with physical disabilities, seizure response dogs for people with epilepsy and seizure disorders, as well as our newest program of service dogs for children with autism.
Wow, that's a lot of different functionality that the dogs need to go through. How exactly does your process work? What is it that happens that makes these dogs available? I don't think they're born with the functionality you need. What do you do in order to prepare these dogs for their service function?
We actually start by coercing Mother Nature to help us with that process, even in the womb. We do our own breeding here at Paws, and in order to do that, it gets the best of both worlds, the best qualities in the litters that we have, in order to get the best results out of the service dogs and out of the hearing dogs and out of all of our assistance dogs. So it does start as young as when the puppies are born, and we have volunteer host homes that house our breeding stock dogs as well as the puppies that are born. But it's not only just the medical end of it and taking care of cleaning up after puppies and feeding them. Those are all really important. But what's important, too, is to start socializing the puppies immediately. Within 2 to 3 weeks, their eyes are opening, they're wandering around, they're learning about their environment. Their environment includes people. Their environment includes being handled by people and trusting people. So we start very, 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 very young with getting them socialized, being handled, being used to trusting people. And as they're still in their homes, they are visited by different people to come in and to socialize them, to get them used to the surroundings, to get them used, again, to trusting people. At about 7, 8 weeks of age, needless to say, everybody loves a cute little puppy, then is where they go into our volunteer foster puppy homes. And those raisers commit to raising our dogs for the first year of their lives. And their responsibility not only is to take care of them, to love them and appreciate them for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but also to take them to basic obedience classes. We need the dogs not only to be cute, cuddly, and fuzzy, but we also need them to understand and respect their role. And that starts with obedience when they're very young. Those volunteer raisers are also responsible for taking the dogs out in public in order to get them socialized. So as they're placed with their clients and they go into a situation, they can say, I've been here before. I'm confident in this situation. I'm okay because my raiser took me here. And when I say out in public, I'm talking grocery stores, movie events, restaurants, theater, planes, trains, and automobiles. Everywhere that their raiser goes on a daily basis is where we need the dogs to be socialized in. So our process starts, again, when the babies are very, 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 very young, from socialization into trusting people up through the volunteer program to where they're about 12 to 14 months old and they come back to our training center here in Wayland, Michigan, where they begin to form their lives as a service dog.
It's a fascinating process. And Deb, what breeds are best for doing this type of work, or can they be mixed breed dogs? I mean, help us understand the layout of what dogs are better at what functions.
Absolutely. We're not breed specific, but what we found in our 32 years of experience in doing this is that the Golden Retrievers and the Labrador Retrievers actually make the best service dogs, not necessarily because of anything more than they just want to please. They want to have that relationship with the human being that allows the human being to be the alpha dog in their environment. They want to please. They're both extremely intelligent breeds. They're both well-respected in the industry. And plus, when you think about the stigma that people with disabilities unfortunately already have or usually have, not necessarily all, in today's society, the last thing that we want to do is to place a dog that could be looked menacing, could the breed could have a reputation for being menacing. So it's just something that we're conscientious of. But in our hearing dog program, we use quite a few smaller breeds because as much as I love my 50-pound golden retriever, I don't want her jumping on me in the morning to tell me it's time to get up.
So, you'll get the point.
We do use some smaller breeds such as Papillons. Papillons make excellent hearing dogs. We use some mixed breeds of the smaller breeds as well for the hearing dogs. We use some miniature poodles as well. We have some on our foster puppy program right now. And we also use standard poodles, not for hearing dogs as much as service dogs, but when we have clients that have dog allergies, we also include poodles in our mix for that particular reason.
I want to go back just a little bit. Is this a organization that is common within the United States, or is this an exceptional facility that isn't seen very often? A little history on where you came from, and how is it that an institution like this, which is certainly amazing because I've been connected with it for many years, how did it ever come to be? So I know that's enough to chew, but if you could chew on that a little bit and let us know where you fit in this whole picture, let us know a little bit of the history.
Absolutely. Well, Rick, we like to think we are exceptional, and so many of our clients think the same. But getting off that bandwagon, what you're saying is absolutely right. How in the world does someone set out to make this organization? How did they know there was a need? How do you even understand the need? And the exact opposite is what actually happened. Our CEO and co-founder, Mike Sapp, did not set out to start a nonprofit organization that 32 years later would have placed 2,400 assistants dog teams across the country and employs 44 people. He never set out to start a business. He never set out to form a nonprofit. Nothing like that. What he did do was something that we hear a lot today, paying it forward, helping your neighbor, lend a helping hand. And that's exactly how our organization started, was by a friend helping a friend. He was a truck driver. And one of the delivery people that he made deliveries to on a regular basis was a hearing impaired deaf gentleman who he and his wife, who was also hearing impaired, had just adopted a baby. Well, needless to say, if you put yourself in that situation, there's going to be some things running through your head. How are we going to know when the baby's crying? They had to work these things out. They had some whistles. They had some lights that lit up, sensitivity. But we're talking 35 years ago. We're technology in the medical technology and adaptive equipment that we have today was just not available. They read something in Dog Fancy magazine, and again, this was prior to internet and 800 numbers even, and had to call for information to an organization out west about the concept of a hearing dog. They called the organization and talked to them, said, "This is our situation. What you say you do sounds like it could help us. What do you think?" They said, "Absolutely. Pack your bags, come to us out in Colorado for 2 weeks. Oh, and by the way, you got to pay for your hotel and your meals and your transportation to get here. And we've got a dog that we would train for you, and you could take it home." Well, needless to say, he couldn't take 2 weeks off of work. They couldn't afford to travel. They had just adopted a baby. And the other thing was, they had their own dog already. So three of those situations, while unfortunate, and they've helped break into and spread the word on the concept of hearing dogs, unfortunately, those situations just did not stack up with the way that their life was at that time. So one of these days, he was talking to Mike upon a delivery, and he knew that Mike had trained Doberman Pinschers for confirmation. So he asked, "Have you ever thought of training a dog to respond to sounds?" And Mike loved a challenge, and so he went over, and their Karen Terrier was named Crystal, and they started putting him through the paces. Was this dog even going to hear the sounds? Was it going to respond to the sounds? Was it going to show interest in responding to the sounds? And all of these criteria need to meet up, and what you're looking at is the work ethic of the dog. Mike didn't know much about care and terriers at the particular time, their work ethic level, anything like that, but they worked through it. Crystal showed a talent, let's say. She showed a talent to not only hear the sound, but as soon as she heard it and acknowledged it by perking her ears or turning her head toward the sound, Mike implemented positive reinforcement. Good girl. Gave her a treat. Well, what dog in this world is not going to say, hey, I just did this and I got a treat. I'm doing that again. And that's exactly how we were born. Each week he would go over there and he would expose Crystal to yet another sound in their house. Most importantly, the baby crying. Well, you can't exactly make a baby cry on demand. We all know that. They cry whenever they want to. Right. So they got crafty and they actually recorded the sound of the baby crying so they could use that sound in training. They eventually added the doorbell sound, the sound of the phone ringing, the sound of the oven timer, the clothes dryer, all these different sounds that you and I might hear in our daily lives, but we don't realize that there are so many people in the world that don't hear them and need that assistance to hear them. Crystal responded to each of them. So what our hearing dogs, and still today, our hearing dog program is based on, is getting the dogs to recognize the sound, recognize that it's a stimulus to go get their person. They run to their person. They give them a paw on the leg to say, hey, pay attention to me. There's something that needs your attention. And then the dog leads them to that sound. And that's exactly how everything came to be, like I said, about 32 years ago now.
Wow. And one thing I've noticed is that it seems like the entire operation, the entire organization kind of feeds off that same exact energy. The idea that these dogs have purpose, but more importantly, everybody's lives around them are changed just because of the dedication that everybody there puts into it. You know, it's
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Excellent point. And that even stretches into our volunteer base as well. I have heard so many times over the years how volunteers' lives have changed, the families, their activities, their coworkers. It is literally, it never ends. It just, the extent and the stretch and the reach of what this one dog brings to a fight, a family, an entire community, everything like that. And we're talking, this is what we call beyond the client. When we always see the dogs and we always match it up mentally, oh, one dog, one client, the benefits and the wonderfulness, let's say, of the dogs go well beyond that client.
Wow, it's an amazing story. The best laid plans don't always add up to what just kind of happens.
And exactly.
It sounds like you guys have got a great system in place. We're speaking this morning with Deb Davis, the National Marketing Manager for Paws with a Cause. And Deb, I wanted to ask you, you brought up the issue of volunteers, and frankly, there's a lot of effort that goes into keeping a dog, even for just a year, in terms of the training and the ongoing maintenance. How do you find these dedicated souls that are willing to go through and do this and then voluntarily give up the animal to go do its service function? Tell me a little bit about how that works, and are you stocked full with volunteers?
Well, Lee, with the way that you just put it, I'm not exactly sure how to summarize that. And then they give them up after the year, and oh, the heartbreak. And well, actually, what we do is, as you can imagine, just like any nonprofit, we rely and live and breathe off of our volunteers. Right. And one of the best ways that we do that is through our volunteer foster puppy raising program. As I mentioned before, the volunteer foster puppy raisers are responsible for basically writing a blank check to the organization on emotions in their heart, right, and as well as their time. A lot of people say, oh, I don't have time right now to do this. What you have to do and what you have the opportunity to do is to incorporate this puppy into your daily lives. Mm-hmm. Again, it goes with you everywhere. Talk to your employer. Take it with you to work. Take it to church. Take it to the movies. Take it to the kids' sports events. And that's exactly how the beginning of all of our assistance dogs is with that foster raiser, as well as our breeding stock host homes. Both of those situations are breeding stock host homes that host our our breeding stock and help to whelp the puppies, as well as the volunteer foster puppy raisers, are all volunteers, and it's on a continual basis that we always need additional help, additional volunteers in both of those areas. We do have a very strong presence around mid-Michigan and the Lansing area with our Lansing-based foster puppy raisers that do a phenomenal job, and many of the listeners might see them out and about around Meridian Mall, training. And it's a great way to get involved and to help touch the future.
Right. But when people run into your trainers with these dogs, if I remember correctly, you had said something the last time about how you don't just necessarily reach out to touch these animals. You want to ask permission to do that. Talk about that.
Excellent point, Lee. Thank you so much for bringing that up. In our world of assistance dogs, doesn't matter if it's a kid, teenager, or an adult, we see a dog. And if we, by human nature, are attracted to dogs, we're a dog owner, we're a dog lover, we're going to be attracted to that animal and want to reach out and pet it. Natural instinct. One of the things that we as an organization teach, as well as many of the other assistance dog agencies across the country, is to ask first. About 10 to 15 years ago, it was a no-pet rule. Straight across the board, it was everything that we taught, everything that we preached. Don't even think of touching the service dog because it's working.
Yeah.
Well, we came to realize, and this is based on our client feedback, that that might have been a little stiff. It might have been a little strict because our clients are the actual end users of our product, if you look at it that way. They're the ones that are actually out there.
Right.
They're the ones confronted by the general public that wants to come up and pet the dog or talk to the dog. So what we say is we've groomed that down a little, and we tell people to please ask first.
Right.
Because only that client is going to know how that dog's going to respond.
Right.
Only that client is going to know how that dog is going to rebound
right.
from getting pet by someone else.
Deb, we're coming up on a break, but we'd like to ask you, we've got coming up in our next segment one of the people who have gotten a dog from Paws, but we'd like to bring you back for our last segment. So if you can just hold on until then, we will bring you back because there's a few more questions Rick and I would like to ask. We've been speaking this morning with Deb Davis, the National Marketing Manager, and we're going to continue the conversation about Paws with a Cause right after the break on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com.
Like the horns on my Silverado grill. And I buy the bar, double round the crown, and everybody's getting down in this town. Ain't never gonna be the same.